This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us. Karen Reed back in a courtroom again today for a new motions hearing. Let's take you there right now.
Yay, yay, yay. All persons have any business before the Honorable Beverly Cannoli, Justice of the Norfolk Superior Court, and for the County of Norfolk. Draw near, give your attendance, and you shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This court is now open. Please be seated.
Judge 22-117, the Commonwealth versus Karen Reed. Can I have counsel identify themselves, starting with the Commonwealth?
Good morning, Your Honor. Laura McLaughlin for the Commonwealth.
Good morning, Ms. McLaughlin.
Adam Lally for the Commonwealth. Good morning,
Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Lally.
Good morning, Your Honor. Hank Brennan
Good morning, Mr. Brennan.
Good morning, Your Honor. Alan Jackson for Ms. Reed.
Good morning, Mr. Jackson.
Good morning, Your Honor. Elizabeth Little, also on behalf of Ms. Reed.
Good morning, Ms. Little.
Morning, Your Honor. Robert Alessi for Ms. Reed.
Good morning, Mr. Alessi.
Good morning, Your Honor. David Giannetti for Karen Reed.
Good morning, Mr. Giannetti. Good morning, Ms. Reed. All right. I was told counsel wanted to see me at sidebar.
Briefly, Judge.
All right, so what I'd like to do is start with, now I don't know if you all have the paper numbers on these. You probably do if you've been looking at Mass Court. So Commonwealth's motion for records, WFXT-TV, Boston 25. This is paper 479. Mr. Brennan?
Good morning again, Your Honor.
Good morning.
I spoke to Mr. Albano last week and again last night.
Okay.
And on behalf of Fox or Boston 25, they are agreeing to my motion in its entirety. They've asked for the courtesy if I could wait until March 1st to receive all of the information. I expect they'll file it with the court.
Okay.
And so with the court's permission, I would ask Your Honor to endorse that agreement. Attorney Albano expresses his regret he couldn't be here. He had another engagement.
Okay. All right, I will. So March 1st before they can get it here? Was that the date you said?
Yes, they'll have it on or before March 1st.
Okay. All right, so that motion is allowed by agreement, and the order is right here, Mr. Clerk. All right. Next, I did amend the scheduling order, so we don't need to hear that anymore, right? And I tried to do it, Ms. Little, to save you from working an entire weekend. You got it early enough to do that, right? On the 10th of February?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. So, paper number 483. This is the motion to compel production of a forensically signed copy of the January 29, 2020 video surveillance footage in law enforcement custody. And the opposition, Jim, I don't have a docket number on this. I think it was just filed. The Commonwealth's opposition in response. Do you have a paper number?
I do, just a second.
Okay.
I'm sorry, the opposition too.
Defendant's motion to compel production of a forensically sound copy. We'll get started in the argument, and you can give me that.
506.
Great, thank you.
That's the response.
Right. Okay. Who's arguing this motion for the defendant?
I am, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. My comments will be relatively brief. We filed this motion basically because we had no choice. We were following the court's instructions, meeting with Mr. Brennan after court the last hearing, which was the 6th, about the download of the video footage that apparently has been stored, or at least we believed at the time last week, had been stored on some sort of an iCloud. We were told that this was an account of a retired detective, as explained by Mr. Brennan, We met after court. Mr. Brennan told us that we did not need, we told Mr. Brennan that we did not need an expert to fly out and go through all the machinations of having someone present if all the information was a download from some iCloud account, unnamed iCloud account. As long as that was videotaped, we were fine with it. And that was basically the agreement. That was the information that we had at the time. We're predicating that on a conversation that we had with Mr. Brennan in January, I think it was January 22nd. He indicated that he went to Canton PD the same date, and the court will call December 12th was the date of what I've referred to as sort of the wild goose chase that we sent an expert out, et cetera. That same afternoon, apparently Mr. Brennan went to the Canton Police Department and found out that there was, in fact, additional video. Which was news to us. He claims that it was news to him. And putting aside how odd that is, after 3 years of being told we have everything, he went on to explain in very specific form in a telephone conversation that he had met with a retired detective. At the time, he could not remember the detective's name. He said that the detective believed that he kept a copy of the January 29 video that we were looking for, and that he said that it was on a work computer's iCloud account. Mr. Brennan said that they intended to download it from the iCloud, turn it over, and that's the point at which we said, if you don't mind, just hold on that because we're litigating ultimately this issue, which was the litigation we had on February 6th. So we had the hearing. The day after court on the 6th, after we reached this agreement that the iCloud would just be downloaded and videoed, we receive an email from Ms. McLaughlin, and that changed the parameters of what we had believed and what we'd been told by Mr. Brennan, and it sounded more like this. The Commonwealth changed the story from some work computer iCloud account to the footage was being stored on what's called the, quote, department's video file system. It's very different than a retired officer's or a retired detective's work computer's iCloud, which is what Mr. Brennan believed at the time and what we were led to believe at the time. So we asked for clarification. Ms. Little sent an email saying, I'm confused. Now you're talking about something that looks like a much more formal system called the department's, the CPD video file system. So we want, that's fine, no problem, download the videos, but we want the metadata and the log files that are associated with that. If it's on a formal file system, it's going to have metadata for the upload, for any access to the data, and for the download. We want the metadata and the log files as well. And that's the key entirely to the audit trail that we're interested in. Historically, we have been asking for videos, for all this video surveillance to be preserved and provided for about 3 years, and this has been one of the centerpieces of this litigation. When we asked for that additional metadata and the log files, Mr. Brennan, in my opinion, took an odd position, which is, nope, we had an agreement, we met right back there in that room, we said that you could videotape the download of the videos, you don't get anything else. If you want anything else, go to court and file a motion, which is why we had to file this motion. We don't think that it was necessary. This is metadata that is literally in the Commonwealth's possession as we speak. They have it. We're entitled to it. It's simple. That's all we're asking for. Mr. Brennan referred to the video files being placed on Canton Police Department Detective File, which is yet another name for where this mysterious video may be held. And we said, it's easy to get the metadata. Let's just do a quick forensic image, it'll take less than a day. And all we want is the metadata for the 24-hour period, 23 hours and 59 minutes to be exact, and we don't need to file the motion. The first question I have is, why would the Commonwealth even object to this? It doesn't seem like something that they would want to object to. This is in their possession. They know that they've got it or they've got access to it. Why wouldn't we get it? These videos, again, have been a pain point for this case. These videos have been a pain point for this case for time immemorial, since the beginning of the case. We've been demanding that footage from 2022, January 29th, 2022. We were told explicitly on December 12th that no footage existed when we went out and had an expert look at the DVR. Their analyst actually called Mr. Brennan when our expert who was on the floor at Canton PD, asked, are there any original files that are in the possession of Canton PD? The analyst went, I think her name was Colleen Crawford. It was Colleen Crawford. She went and called Mr. Brennan, according to our analyst. Mr. Brennan then informed Ms. Crawford to tell our expert, get it from the defense. Whatever, if you want original files, get it from the defense, knowing full well that we don't have it. If we had it, we wouldn't be there. And then that it was that same day that miraculously the Canton Police Department revealed that, in fact, it did have some video footage on this either iCloud or video system. We take the position very clearly that this is Brady information, it's exculpatory information. The audit trail is also Brady and exculpatory because the audit trail will tell us information that we won't otherwise have from the raw video. How did the footage end up on the system? When did the footage end up on the system? Who put it on the system? How many times has it been accessed? Has it been accessed at all? Has it been altered? Has it been manipulated? Has anything been deleted? Those are all data points that will be embedded in the metadata and the log files. The only way to answer those questions is for us to get it. That's all. And that's all we were asking of Mr. Brennan. We are surprised that he would object to that because we would think that in point of fact, he would want those same data as well. Mr. Brennan made a point of saying when he first came on this case, look, we want to give Ms. Reed a fair trial. We want to be as transparent as possible. And my hope is that was not just lip service for the media. I don't know why the Commonwealth would object to this. There's no reason to object to it. They have it, we want it, and now we're asking for the court to order it. I'll submit.
Mr. Brennan.
It seems like another effort to portray some type of injustice wrought upon the defense that half the facts are left out of the presentation. So to talk about reality, the reality is that I invited them to come download the DVR NVR where they full well knew that I had no idea if there was still video on there and why would they be 3 years later. And after they filed a motion making representations that weren't accurate, I no longer had the confidence to have off-the-record agreements with the defense. There has to be a certain level of confidence that when you have an agreement and you try to help the other side, that the memory of the discussion is going to be portrayed accurately. And in losing confidence, the best way to practice for discovery is motion. And yet the court asked me to meet with the defense after court, and I will always honor the court's request. So because of your order, we met with the defense. Now, as a matter of background, when they came out to look at the DVR, there was no motion. That was by invitation. It wasn't lip service. It wasn't trying to spin a story for the media. It was a good faith effort to accommodate the defense to an entitlement that they weren't actually entitled to. I didn't go on the 12th and speak to the police officers because we were here on Dr. Russell. I went after because I wanted to know more about the cameras. I had never visited the station. I wanted to know about the process. And I wanted to ask firsthand anybody that was there about the process because I wanted to do due diligence. And when I met with the chief and other officers, I was told by a retired sergeant who was there, DGM Petro, that he was the officer who would download video upon request. He never downloaded a 24-hour period. He was never asked to. There was never a motion to. When the government would ask, or state police would ask for a download of a particular event like the Sallyport area, he would download it. And what he told me is that that is on the DVR, an independent unit that has all the metadata and the logs if it still survives time. He said when he would download it, he then had his own hard drive at his office, and there was different files. One was called detective file because he's a detective. And he'd simply click and drag a copy of whatever he filed or copied for the government or the state police before. It wasn't a full accounting of all the metadata or all the video. It was whatever he decided to copy because he was asked to copy it. And so I thought, well, there's more information that exists. It's not going to be a 24-hour period. It's probably going to be cumulative, but I wouldn't know unless I looked. Now, the standard practice is the Commonwealth would then just ask the detective to download a copy, and we'd meet our Rule 14 obligations by providing it to the defense. It's as simple as that. The defense is entitled to know more. There's nothing mysterious about it. There's no hiding about it. There's no story. It's just video on the detective file on his hard drive. But I called the defense, not only due diligence, professional courtesy, to say, you are already involved in the process with the NVR DVR. I've already invited you to bring an expert. I want to download this information that he copied over time and give you a copy. And they said, we don't know how we feel about that. Can you wait? I did not want to wait. I don't want any video being overwritten or destroyed. It was against my judgment, but I was deferring to the defense request to wait. And now it has become part of the spirit of their argument of oppression that somehow there's something odd or miraculously hidden about this. It is simply video that the sergeant clicked and dragged to another file that we can go in, click and drag it to a hard drive, and give them a copy. After you asked us to speak in the back room, the six of us were there. We had a conversation. We said we would simply copy the video, and then as another measure, which was unnecessary, we'd actually videotape it. Now, we did that because the defense wanted us to, and also it seems if it's on videotape, it can limit baseless allegations later. So we were happy to do it. And then when we got back to the office, the request changed under the spirit of Brady violations and due process. It was suggested that we were supposed to engage now in a different process, and that was metadata. I don't even know if the detective file has metadata. I don't actually know exactly what they're looking for. It is a simple click and drag process. Whatever video exists with the sergeant, we will give them. We're obligated to give them. The only delay has been because they've asked for all these different accommodations and different styles of doing it. And so we want to meet our responsibility, download the videos, and simply give them to the defense. There's nothing else about this issue. It's that simple. And technically, we don't have any other obligation other than to download it. It seems as though when I extend courtesies and obligations, it becomes complicated. It's not a complicated process. So we'd like to finish our Rule 14, download the video, give it to the defense, and then they can make any commentary or argument they want about it.
How quickly can you do that?
I imagine we could do it one day, but today is, we have it done by the end of the week.
You want to make, I'd be heard briefly.
Yes.
Very, very briefly.
Take your time.
Thank you. Mr. Brennan's confidence, notwithstanding, I don't know what to say about that, it's pretty immaterial, what his level of confidence is. I'm more concerned about his obligations as the representative of the Commonwealth. And he really didn't talk about the metadata in his argument. He didn't talk about the metadata in his written presentation, his opposition, because he knows that we're entitled to it. That's all we're asking. One thing I really agree with him on, this is simple. This shouldn't be a fight. He's got video data. He's got metadata associated with that video data, and there's probably, maybe, log files. If there are, we're entitled to them, and he should want to give those over to us. He just indicated that this detective file, whatever it is a hard drive. Every electronic storage device has metadata on it. So even if it's a drag and drop, makes it sound super simple, that electronic drag and drop will have metadata associated with it. That hard drive, every time it's accessed and the data on it is accessed, also will have metadata. Euphemistically, it's called electronic fingerprints. Every single, whether it's a thumb drive, a hard drive, or a server, every one of them have metadata on it. So it's not difficult. And we're interested in the videos, but we're also interested in the data that is behind the videos as well. And I wouldn't be nearly so concerned. And Mr. Brennan makes this argument, well, the defense is just up here, you know, again, pontificating about how they've been oppressed, I think is his word. Nobody's talking about oppression. We're talking about fairness. We have been told from day one, before the first trial ever started, Your Honor, this court recalls this. We don't have any further video evidence. Whatever videos we have, we've given them over to you. Then on April 4th, in the shadow of the trial starting, we get more video. Where did that come from? Then in the middle of trial, we get more video. Happens to be an inverted video. Where did that one come from? Then on October 24th, we get more video. This past October 24th, well after the trial, we get more video of Brian Higgins out at the location of CPD on his phone. Where are these dribs and drabs of video coming from? That's all we're asking. And Mr. Brennan should want
the... October 24th. Did that video come with the metadata?
No. No, it's just a video. It's a video file. And I'll also... That's a great point, Judge. When you have a hard drive that's storing video files, my understanding, I'm no expert. My understanding is that hard drive will likely have some sort of an EXE program, an executable program on it to play the video or to store the video. It'll also have potentially some sort of video player, maybe a proprietary player on it, and then there's going to be the file. So that's what we're asking for. What's the metadata associated with all those things? It's not a hard ask, it's not a heavy lift. There's no reason to justify, well, you know what, I'm just gonna drag and drop this and you get the video and nothing associated with the video. That's all we're asking.
Any further response, Mr. Brennan?
Your Honor, there's no attempt to deprive the defendant of anything. In fact, historically, if we look back, we invited them to come to the actual hard drive and do it themselves, and they declined. So this isn't an issue where the government is trying to hide something or keep something from them. If there was obvious metadata, we would provide it, but I don't understand this is that type of system. So they're asking for certain things that I don't think we can accommodate. If they want to come, they're invited. If the court wants me to inquire of a retired sergeant detective about metadata, I'll do that. But the issue is going to become that when we drag and click these videos, and if there is no metadata or logs of what they say they're looking for, there's going to be yet another accusation. And I do not want to invite needless accusations when it's beyond our duty. Our duty is to provide the videos. What more can we do than to invite the defense themselves to come into the Canton Police Department and take a look at the system? So if there's something they want, then we'll copy it for them.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, Ms. Giannetti, the next one should be fairly quick and simple. The motion for Pro Hoc Vici. I asked you before when Mr. Alessi joined us, you have a rather vague good cause exists to grant this motion because Mr. Bettereau, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yes.
Bettereau has specialized skill and knowledge in representing defendants in matters of this nature. I asked you last time what you mean by that.
Right.
I need another affidavit. As soon as I get another affidavit that has a little bit more in it, I'll likely allow the motion.
Understood. And would the court require further oral argument, or do you anticipate potentially allowing it on the papers, Judge?
I would probably allow it on the papers unless I know there's an opposition, but
okay. Thank you.
It's rare. All right, but I need a more detailed affidavit.
Your Honor, may I have just a moment with counsel? Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. The next one's paper.
May I be heard briefly?
Yes.
May I be heard briefly?
Yes. Yes. So I did just say, unless there was an opposition. Is this an opposition?
It's not an opposition, but I have some thoughts that I want to share with the court.
Okay.
It's not an opposition because I think a defendant who's presumed innocent has the right to counsel of their choosing. I think it's a very fundamental right. And I don't think the Commonwealth should dabble in taking a position trying to prevent an accused from having counsel of their choice. That being said, as Your Honor may be aware, Mr. Bettereau is also an attorney for Mr. Kearney. And that is something that I think the court should consider and be thoughtful about for a couple of reasons. There is a history, a symbiotic relationship between Ms. Reed and Mr. Kearney. There is a history of documented evidence showing the sharing of discovery between the parties. And inevitably, that discovery is promoted in such a way that abuses, harasses, and bullies witnesses in this case. Not unmindful that there's over a dozen indictments against Mr. Kearney, which Mr. Bettereau is representing him for. Now, it's not great clarity, but it's been represented that there is a relationship between Mr. Bettereau, Mr. Bradle, who's Mr. Kearney's other attorney, and the defense attorneys in this case. There's a record that has been represented that the attorneys in Mr. Kearney's case, Mr. Bedrow, Mr. Bredo, have an understanding with the defense attorneys in this case, that there's an ongoing, long-term, implicit mutual assistance and mutual defense that they've been a part of for a long time. Now, the Commonwealth is not entitled to any product of a mutual defense, but it is curious in that Ms. Reed and Mr. Kearney are not co-defendants. It is curious that given the indictments, most of them that deal with witnesses in this case that allegedly have been harassed and intimidated, it is curious that that relationship exists and the nature of that relationship. It's not something that I think I'm entitled to, but the court certainly could delve into that ex parte. It's important because we'll later talk about, in a sanctions motion, a violation, a direct violation of protective orders in this case. And the discovery in this case was provided to special attorney in Mr. Kearney's case to make sure that there was a thorough review of all discovery, and much of that was turned over subject to a protective order. And I expect there'll be a similar motion in Mr. Kearney's case. Within 24 hours of the violation in this case, there was a violation of different material in that case. And so inevitably, you have Attorney Bedrow, who will be serving two masters. He will receive protected information in this case that is supposed to remain protected and not leaked and distributed to the media and the press and court pleadings. And some of that information will not be information that Mr. Kearney is entitled to. And being in a position of representing two different defendants who are not co-defendants, being in that position is going to be a difficult task to manage. And I am worried, and I have good reason to be worried, about the privacy of our protected material. I have good reason to be concerned about the improper dissemination of our material. I have a reason to be concerned about the continued harassment and bullying of witnesses. And this information, if a court order won't protect it, then nothing will. Then nothing will. And so we know this relationship is substantive. We know it is a deep relationship. The attorneys, in fact, in this case, have direct communications or had with Mr. Kearney, over 29 calls each. And so, not to speculate, but having a mutual agreement, a mutual aid agreement, does not allow an attorney then to become one of the attorneys who is entitled to protection under a protective order in a particular case. It doesn't. And that concerns the government. And so, while I do not object to Attorney Bedrow, they should have as many lawyers as they want, I think the court should have some caution and some concern and should consider some type of inquiry ex parte without the Commonwealth present about the nature of this joint aid agreement and the history of it and whether protected information was ever shared prior to Mr. Bedrow presumably joining this case, and whether this protocol in place that if there is protected information in this case, that it does not leak again, it does not get shared with a non-co-defendant. I don't even know how to describe the relationship. I'm asking the court to consider assuring itself of those safety measures because this trial is going to happen. And these witnesses should be able to walk into this courtroom without fear, without bullying, without abuse, and that has not happened. For many reasons, it has not happened. And this makes it a more complicated issue. The defendant is entitled to a fair trial, which means she's entitled to another attorney, so I don't object. But the Commonwealth is entitled to. The Commonwealth is entitled to a fair trial, and the witnesses are entitled to walk in this courtroom without being abused. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Yannetti, I have to consider everything that was just said, but I'll wait for your affidavit.
Right. We'll try to address those issues in the affidavit, Judge. Thank you.
Okay. All right. The next one, I believe, is paper 489, Commonwealth's motion to amend the December 5th order pertaining to audio recordings in possession of Gretchen Voss and/or Metro Corp. Relatively straightforward, but I'll hear you, Mr. Burnham.
Your Honor, you provided us the full audio between the defendant attorneys and Ms. Voss. I'd like to have it transcribed because I expect to use many parts of it for trial. The order was all the attorneys could listen to it. I can report none of the attorneys have listened to it other than me. It was sent to a transcriber, but I told the transcriber not to listen to it or record it because although I expect it might have been in the protective order, I want to be beyond caution on this and beyond reproach. So I'm asking permission for me to be able to make a copy, stenographer, make a copy so that we can identify pieces that we expect to use for trial.
Okay. There's no objection to this, is there?
No, Your Honor.
Of course, I'll provide the defense a copy if they want.
Yes. All right, so this is allowed. All right, so the next is paper 490, defendants rule 14 and 17, motion for court order authorizing defense access to the Lexus in Traverse and to the driveway at One Meadows Avenue in Canton to conduct an independent testing and analysis. I did receive this morning an affidavit from attorney Mark Diller on behalf of the O'Keefe family in response to defendants' Rule 14 and 17 motion for court order authorizing defense access to the Lexus in Traverse and to the driveway at One Meadows Ave in Canton to conduct independent testing and analysis. I assume counsel has seen this affidavit of Mr. Diller?
Yes, Your Honor. In the interest of saving time, I would alert the court that Mr. Brennan and I have conferred prior to today, and today he handed me a drive that appears to have the 3D scans that we were seeking.
Okay.
So that may well satisfy us, and I would ask that the court take no action on this motion until we've had a chance to view them, and we may not need to have action on this motion.
Okay. I do just want to say it's clear from this affidavit that there's the spirit of cooperation, even though unnecessary, frankly, on behalf of the O'Keefe family. So I would not do anything really other than what their lawyer has suggested. Okay. All right, so no action taken. So the next is paper 493, defendant's motion to reconsider reciprocal discovery order, and paper 503, the Commonwealth's opposition. So who is arguing this motion for the defendant?
I will be, Your Honor.
Okay, I'll hear you.
Would you like me to address both issues first or?
Both issues.
Okay. So, Your Honor, taking first the motion to reconsider the reciprocal discovery order, I start by acknowledging that the court has wide discretion in this area with regard to discovery orders and reciprocal discovery orders. I'm also aware of the court's ruling in the first trial, whereby we were ordered essentially to turn over any evidence that we were going to use when impeaching Commonwealth's witnesses. And that's what we're asking the court to reconsider. It is our position, Judge, that part of, and I believe I quoted a case on the last page of the motion, the effectiveness of page 12, Judge, of my motion, the effectiveness of cross-examination often depends on being able to surprise a witness, particularly an accusing witness, with evidence that contradicts or is inconsistent with his trial testimony. And with regard to at least two witnesses, the examples that we outline in the motion, we were deprived of that very legitimate exercise of confronting a witness and surprising them with an inconsistency in their testimony. With regard to, Ms. McCabe, it was never mentioned anywhere that she spent
an hour at the home, the personal home of Mr. Lank from the Canton Police Department. That only came up after we were ordered and did produce, pursuant to the court's order, the geofence data, which revealed that that meeting did take place. And so, you know, the Commonwealth, armed with that information, you know, went and talked to her about it, obviously, because she was very well prepared on cross-examination to address that issue and came up with a very detailed explanation that appeared to diffuse the fact that she hadn't mentioned it before. She was very well prepared for that. And, you know, secondly, with regard to the juvenile witness, as the court remembers, I'm sure, from the first trial, we had that video of the stake tips incident, and it clearly did not show the type of animosity that had been originally prepared. And so when it came time for trial testimony, it turned into something different. It turned into, well, that was a takeout incident, which, you know, we question what was done behind the scenes to, you know, arrive at that conclusion as well. And, you know, I also, you know, include in the motion, and just to be clear, Judge, this is something I will start with in addressing the motion for sanctions. This is my motion. I drafted it. None of my co-counsel saw this motion before it was filed, so I take responsibility for everything that's in there. But, you know, we also make the point that with regard to, you know, Trooper Proctor, it appears as though there was, you know, he was monitoring the trial. At least that's the inference that we draw, because he specifically says the one part that he didn't want to watch was Mr. Jackson's closing argument. And he obviously uses derogatory language toward him as well. You know, if we turn over this information in advance, not only does the Commonwealth get a chance to blunt this information by having the witness be given an opportunity to mold their testimony to take into account the impeachment information, but, you know, this is a, I won't say unique trial, but it's a rare trial that, you know, is streamed online. There's obviously a lot of press interest. Some people are watching everything that goes on. The court has issued sequestration orders. We don't know for sure whether they've been complied with. And to the extent that we turn over this impeachment material and the Commonwealth uses it, you know, it's another opportunity for a witness to see potentially in advance something that could otherwise be damaging toward cross-examination. So switching to the Commonwealth's motion for sanctions.
Wait, when I said both, I thought you made 2 points that you made about the 2 points.
Understood. All right. So, Mr. Brennan? The court should enforce reciprocal discovery. You should enforce it, Your Honor. Trial by ambush is simply that, trial by ambush. There were many instances when I reviewed this trial where the defense came up to sidebar, they had pictures, photos, things they didn't turn over that they expected to use for impeachment. And the rule requires them to do that. The reporter's note to Rule 14 talks about reciprocal discovery. Quote, even-handed discovery to both sides will improve both the administration and the delivery of justice. A witness has a right to look at information before their testimony. Just like the Commonwealth provides all evidence to the defense should do the same. Now, it's notable in the rules, although they're changing March 1st. We look at Rule 14A1A. That has a limitation in discovery for the Commonwealth under the person's direction and control. The reason for that is because the Commonwealth, unlike the defense, must provide all discovery in their possession and control. So, for example, if the Commonwealth is going to call an expert, they have to provide everything. Although the rules are a little bit more limited, it is the best practice to provide everything. If the Commonwealth is not going to call a witness, they still have obligations. And that is why that language is in Rule 14A1A. If the Commonwealth seeks consult with somebody, they're not going to call. They need to produce it to the defense. For example, I get random emails from unknown people, anonymous, or sometimes there are names on them, talking about theories of the case. I give it to the defense because it's in my possession, custody, or control. I have no intention of calling an anonymous person, but because I have the information, because I am the Commonwealth, they're entitled to it. If we look under 14B, it's different for the defense. If they're going to call a witness, they have an obligation to produce evidence. If they have evidence they're going to use at trial, they have an obligation to provide it. And so allowing the defense to simply hide information because they think it's impeachment at trial is uneven-handed. It's not fair play. It's not in the interest of justice. There is no caveat or exception for the defense that they're entitled, in state court anyways, federal rules are very different, in state court for them to withhold reciprocal discovery. The order of the court at the first trial, even though it wasn't followed religiously, was that reciprocal discovery was an obligation of both sides, and that should not change. It's going to create chaos, it's going to create delay in the case, and it's going to create an unfairness. It will be trial by ambush. It will be. And so since there is no caveat or exception for the defense, and since there's no entitlement to withhold impeachment material, we should not make an exception for this team. They should provide it like everybody else. So I'm asking you to maintain the reciprocal discovery order that is already in place, and then hopefully at this trial, it'll be abided by.
Okay. Was there any follow-up to that? The motion for sanctions will be a little bit later.
Right. No, the only thing I would point out, Your Honor, is that with regard to the report of Jennifer McCabe, revealing this link meeting, that report wasn't provided to us until after she testified. And I think this court remembers from the trial that there was sort of a rolling discovery that we received even as the trial was going on. So I just wanted to make that point.
Okay.
Your Honor, I've tried my best, and I will continue to provide all discovery timely to the defense.
Thank you.
I've been on the side where late discovery comes in a trial, and I never want that to happen. Sometimes exceptions happen on both sides, but that is not the intent of the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth is doing everything possible to give the defense more discovery than they're entitled to as early as we can.
All right. Thank you. Next is paper 495. This is defendant's motion to compel discovery, and then there was a response from the Commonwealth. Paper 502. So who's arguing this for the defendant?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay.
Your Honor, we filed a motion to compel certain discovery that is still outstanding. There's 10 items. I'll address those in turn. The first request deals with...
So you have the Commonwealth's response, right?
Yes.
Where it doesn't object to some. Are you going to skip over those? Or?
Yes, of course, okay. Your Honor. For those, I'll just ask that the court allow those requests. For request one, Your Honor, we've asked for all chain of custody logs, reports, evidence logs, and other documentation regarding how the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office and the Massachusetts State Police came into possession of each distinct production of Canton Police Department video surveillance footage from January 29th. As the court has heard many times, we have received three separate productions, one before trial, which was missing the precise time Ms. Reed's Lexus was brought into the Canton Sallyport garage, another production in the middle of trial, which included an inverted video, showing only the left portion of Ms. Reed's taillight, not the condition of the right rear taillight in the Sallyport garage when it was first brought in. Then we have a third production, which was not turned over until after trial in this matter. In that production, we have video surveillance footage from outside the Canton Police Department, where it shows Brian Higgins on his cell phone talking to someone at 1:30 a.m. outside of the Canton Police Department. The only report or documentation associated with any of those three productions is a singular report from July of 2024 that details an IT person, Colleen Crawford's, review of video surveillance footage and summarizing information about what she looked at. We have no chain of custody logs, no evidence logs, no reports regarding the download of that information. We don't know who the custodian of records is with regards to those three productions, or how this information magically appeared in the Massachusetts State Police and Norfolk County DA's possession. We are entitled to that. We're simply asking for what we have in all the other video surveillance footage, evidence logs, a copy of when that was booked into evidence. The Commonwealth cannot skirt their discovery obligations by simply failing to memorialize evidence that doesn't help them.
So does the Commonwealth have an obligation to create a document if it's not already in existence?
That information is in their possession. It's Brady, right? We have Canton police officers who handled this footage. We have Massachusetts State Police officers who handled this footage. They know that they downloaded the information. You cannot skirt your Brady obligations by failing to memorialize things in reports. We are asking for basic reports from the witnesses who recovered this evidence. They can't avoid cross-examination on evidence that they're admitting at trial by failing to disclose who obtained it and when. And I can understand why they might not want to do that. There's an ongoing federal investigation. No one seems to want to take ownership of these videos. But that does not absolve them of their Rule 14 obligations. We still don't know who the custodian of records is. The Commonwealth cannot skirt its mandatory discovery obligations by refusing to memorialize this material and relevant evidence in a report simply because they don't want the individuals involved to be questioned about it. The Commonwealth is intentionally subverting its obligations under Rule 14. We're asking that this request be allowed.
All right.
The second category of information, Your Honor, is information that relates to the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office investigation clearing Officer Matthew Farwell of the murder of Sandra Birchmore. There are certain names that this court will recognize. First responding officer, Sergeant Lank. Detective, Kevin Albert. Trooper, Mike Dunn. Trooper, Zach Clark. Colleen Crawford. Lieutenant John Fanning. Trooper Guarino. Lieutenant Brian Tully. Trooper Kathleen Prince. And Norfolk County District Attorney Michael Morrissey. All of these individuals are material and relevant witnesses in this case. They are also material and relevant witnesses in the investigation that cleared sworn peace officer Matthew Farwell in the murder of Sandra Birchmore. The parallels in these two cases could not be clearer. It's the same material witnesses, same investigators, same prosecutors, same failure to investigate a law enforcement officer who should have been a suspect.
That's the latest from the Karen Reed motions hearing taking place today. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.